So we're here for I Am That. And I have two books to choose from. My mind wants to choose one and my heart wants to choose the other. So guess which one I'm going to choose? I have the Nisargadatta Gita. That's the one the heart was looking at. The Nisargadatta Gita is a book of quotes. And off and on, I've looked at all the quotes up through quote eight. So that means I'm starting with quote nine. Quote nine says, "Hold on to the I am to the exclusion of everything else. The I am in movement creates the world. The I am at peace becomes the absolute." This same quote is in the Seven Steps to Awakening. I know because I think I've contemplated it recently. It's extremely familiar. The author of this book, Pradeep Apte, says, his commentary on that quote, "Leave everything aside and just grab hold of the I am. Just observe its power, its stirrings, and its movements that created the world, along with which came all this turmoil and misery. Come back to the I am and let the I am be in the I am. Then it becomes still and disappears, and then there is peace, for there is only the absolute now." So I think what I'm going to do is share a short video from YouTube. I would call this video the beginner's level practice of this quote. There is a more advanced level, which we'll look at next, but I'm going to go ahead and just share the whole screen because I haven't found it yet. And it's hard to do that when you share the optimized piece. It's hard to go find something. Bigfoot, see him?
Abide in I am means when awareness recognizes that there's this obsessive thinking, a thought could arise, and the thought is I am, which becomes the bookend to that obsessive thinking. Our contentment and our peace is not to be found in outcomes, but rather in our being, in what we are at our core. And this is not an intellectual belief. We can test this out for ourselves. We can start moving back to the heart more regularly. So Nisargadatta's teaching would suggest that we abide in I am. His guru suggested this to Nisargadatta, abide in I am. Nisargadatta trusted him. And 3 years later, as the story goes, there was self-realization. So what exactly does abide in I am mean? What it means is that there is this field of being that exists prior to thinking, a field of being that we're not particularly familiar with, because for our whole life we have lived as the thinker, as the doer, trying to control life through thought, imagining the future and having expectations about it, remembering the past and having regrets, and complaining in the present moment, looking at things and judging them as good or bad, judging them as in line with how we think life should be or out of line with how we think life should be, all based on the ingrained beliefs of who we are and what we need in order to be complete. So for a large proportion of the population, there's no idea that there is any other way of being in life, no experiential reference point of a resting in the heart, no experiential reference point of functioning from outside the continuous, incessant, obsessive stream of thinking. And so abide in I am is suggesting that there is this field, and that thinking about the past and the future with expectations and feeling guilt and blame is what keeps us outside of that field. And so all of the concepts I've been speaking about tonight are concepts that say our suffering is basically a feeling in the body that at the base of it comes from a belief about ourself being the doer and the other being the doer, and me needing life to be pleasure, pleasure, pleasure in order for me to be happy and complete. So it's pointing to this obsessive thinking and saying none of it is true. In fact, all of it is our suffering. And so abide in I am means dropping out of that thinking into being. And this is not something that we do, but rather it's happening once there is this realization that all of this thinking is actually taking us away from where we want to be. We start off with this obsessive thinking because deep down we think it's good for us. Deep down we think it's going to take us to what we need. Deep down we think we might control life and we might actually get happiness through pleasure. Now we can start to see that we've been doing this for long enough and that that thinking actually is the suffering. So this now is part of the body's up-to-date conditioning, this concept. And abide in I am means when awareness recognizes that there's this obsessive thinking, a thought could arise, and the thought is I am, which becomes the bookend to that obsessive thinking. So it's, you know, why didn't I do this? I should have done that in order to achieve that result, and that person should have helped me, blah, 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 blah. And then there's a recognition that that's what's happening. And the thought, I am, arises. And the I am can cut off that thinking. And it cuts off the thinking because now we realize that there's no point in this thinking. So we're happy for it to just stop midstream. And so I am can drop us into being. And what we'll find is it might only drop us into being for a second. And before we know it, we're back into thinking again about why didn't I do this and why didn't that person do this and I need this to be the outcome and it's not looking like it's going to happen. And 10 minutes can go past where this thinking, this obsessive thinking has happened before awareness lands on it again. It says, oh, there it goes again. And then the thought, I am, arises. I am, full stop. And at the end of the full stop, there's a dropping into being. Maybe only for a second again, before the thinking starts again. But that doesn't matter that we only drop in for a second. What can happen is we can find ourselves doing this 10 or 15 times in a day, not as a practice so much, but rather when awareness lands on the obsessive thinking, the thought I am, which is the bookend to that obsessive thinking, the end, the cut, that thought arises automatically. And we can carry on our day as we're doing this. We do carry on our day. And the thinking will come back, and that's okay. And then the thought, I am, cuts it off. And each time we drop down into the heart. What I mean by dropping down into the heart is that the center of consciousness resides up in the head because of all the thinking. But its home is actually the chest and the heart. So when the thought, I am, arises, it cuts off thinking. And if we can imagine that all of a sudden the center of consciousness is dropped into the chest area and that life is being seen not from the head but from the chest, the reason it's in the chest, in the heart, is that that's the place where impersonal consciousness links into the human being and functions through the human being as personal consciousness. So that's the junction box. The heart is the junction box for impersonal consciousness connecting to the body and flowing through the body as personal consciousness. And so in the heart resides the sense of being, the sense of I am.
That was Roger Castillo. Did that sound familiar to anybody? Did that remind anybody of anything? If it did, go ahead and please just speak up. Yeah, Don.
Ramana Maharshi has the Cave of the Heart meditation. He talks a lot about abiding in the heart. So I know we went through a whole series where you're like, well, your heart is not, that's not quite it. But another Locke Kelly meditation where he talks about the Cave of the Heart meditation. When you drop within and go within and fill that area, it at least gets you away from, for a lot of people, myself including, when I think this whole area here becomes really tight and it just seems like it's all congested up here. But when I go from the neck down, just even the thought, okay, drop. Just drop and feel from the neck down. There is a felt sense that now my attention, my energy, whatever's behind that attention has shifted, and it's different. All the crazy thoughts, boom, 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 ah, past, especially the thoughts about past and future seem to dissipate. So,
thank you. Anybody else that remind anybody of anything? And as Jacqueline is saying, that's exactly what she needed to hear in this moment. That's probably why I didn't get to read the book I wanted to read, Jacqueline, because you needed this. Because I really wanted to read the other book, but my heart kept saying, go to this, go to this. I tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of the I am that I am mantra that was given in the teachings of Inner Ramana.
That's what I was
going to
say.
Yeah, yeah. Let me read this again. This is from page 13 in the teachings of Inner Ramana. This is the instructions for using the mantra. Today, let's talk about the practice of the mantra and how this practice is best used to quiet the mind. The quieting of mind is essential to awakening, or to realization of self. This is because thinking acts as a blanket that covers the self and hides it completely from view. Therefore, it makes sense that if one is to realize self, he must remove the blanket. That is the purpose of the mantra. In fact, it just hit me. I have a blanket right here. I'm like Muji. I always teach with a blanket on my lap. So let me pull it up here a little bit. All right. So this is how we walk around when we're thinking, right? Covering up the true self. And then when we notice the thinking with awareness, like Roger was talking about, and we could say, I am. We could say the mantra that's in Inner Ramana, I am that I am. We could even say what Don said, just drop, right? The blanket comes down for an instant, and we get to see the self. The blanket may come back, right? But then when we notice again, and we say the mantra, or just drop, the blanket comes down again. It's like we're playing peekaboo with the self, right? But what we're doing as we're playing peekaboo with the self is we're getting to know the self. Where if we never play peekaboo with the self, the blanket's always covering it up, right? So again, the purpose of the mantra, this is the purpose of the mantra. I want to back up one more paragraph. The quieting of mind is essential to awakening or to realization of self. This is because thinking acts as a blanket that covers self and hides it completely from view. Therefore, it makes sense that if one is to realize the self, he must remove the blanket. This is the purpose of the mantra. When it is not used to fully remove the blanket completely, it can still be used to partially enable one to have peaks beneath the blanket. These peaks are helpful, valuable, in fact. And you heard Roger Castillo say, you may only drop into being for a second, you know, but that's okay. That's still good, right? That's what this is too. These peaks are helpful, valuable, in fact, to the realization of self, because they help one to realize the goal in a very real way. This increases the desire to strive for the goal through devotion and practice. So our purpose is to quiet the mind as much as possible. And it is also our purpose to quiet the mind in a sincere way, which is different than quieting the mind through denial or fear. Yeah, and Don says it's also like the 2 to 5 second practice that Bentinho talks about. I agree. Can anybody tell me what's the difference between using the mantra in what is called here a sincere way and using the mantra to quiet the mind through denial or fear? Does anybody know? If you do, just go ahead and speak. Hey, go ahead, Don.
I feel like it could be, you know, how you just cover it over. Like, you want to feel the mantra inside your heart. Like, it's a felt, there's a literally felt sensation of the words as vibration. And it feels like a balm inside, a soothing balm. But if in your head, I am that I am, I am that I am, I am, you know, you, there's like a totally different feeling. Like, it's saying I am that I am all up here is totally different than having your attention resting in the heart and with devotion and a felt sense of maybe even curiosity and wonder of, like, you don't even know how that's going to feel in the next time you utter I am that I am. And if you say it differently, like maybe you'll say, I am that I am, or I am, you know, because you can evoke a different sense. Each, it's almost playful, but you can feel the difference.
Yeah, very good. Absolutely. So that was a perfect, perfect, perfect answer to the question. I couldn't have asked for a better answer than that, Don. Thank you. So yeah, so again, the paragraph says, so our purpose is to quiet the mind as much as possible. And it is also our purpose to quiet the mind in a sincere way, which is different than quieting the mind through denial or fear. Let me teach you how to use the mantra. The first rule of following the practice of mantra is you will use the mantra as often as you remember. And we heard Roger give the example of, you know, the idea may appear in the mind, I think he said 13 to 15 times a day, you know, and he said, this isn't a practice. He said, the thought to say I am will appear in the mind, right? And that's exactly what this is saying. Like, you're not, this isn't a practice where you're going around all day to saying I am that I am, I am that I am. What's happening is you have decided somewhere within your soul that you're going to use the mantra to quiet the mind and drop into the field of being as a tool. And what happens is when the mind is yap, 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 yapping, and awareness notices that, this decision from your soul will remind you in that moment to stop the chatter. Because you want to stop it, because you see it's invaluable, because you're excited to stop it, as Roger said, and you use the mantra as the bookend or as the full stop, using his language. So chatter, 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 awareness notices how crazy you are. And then the reminder comes in to say the mantra. And at that point, you do it. It's a full stop. You know, I'll use the I am that I am. I am that I am. Right? So the first rule of following the practice of mantra is you will use the mantra as often as you remember. Try to avoid remembering the use of mantra and still choosing not to use it. Resistance may come into the mind in this way. The reminder of mantra may appear, and then a thought that you are too busy in this moment to do it properly, and so it's better to do it later. There's another example of how busyness is a defense against God, right? That is nonsense. If the reminder of the mantra has come into the mind now, then now is a perfect time to do it, right? So none of this, oh, I can't write this second. I got to deal with this, right? No, now. If it came now, do it now. Now's when you need that full stop. The second rule of practicing the mantra is it can be done with eyes open or eyes closed. Eyes closed can help to bring full focus to the mantra. But if one is involved in an activity such as driving, when the reminder comes to do the mantra, the restrictions brought about by the activity are not limiting to the usefulness of the mantra. So basically what I hear here is if you can close your eyes, I am that I am, that's helpful. But if you're in a work conversation or you're driving a car or for some other reason you can't close your eyes, you can still say it. And right, you don't have to say it out loud. You say it in your mind. You know, you're standing there with your boss in a professional environment. You're not going to, right in the middle of a conversation, say, I am that I am. Your boss is going to go, what? You know, unless I happen to be your boss, then I get it. But, a professional boss is going to say, what? So you just kind of say it to yourself, even as you're continuing the conversation, right? I am that I am on the inside without moving your lips. Rule 3 is to practice the mantra with love and devotion, which I think that Don demonstrated perfectly. Say the mantra from the heart. I have told you that the mantra is a gift of awakening. Cherish it as a very precious gift. In the moments that you give to the mantra, give with love. Give with the love that you would give to the most precious of all gifts, right? So when the reminder comes, really love that mantra in those few moments that you're saying it and being with it. The mantra is a practice of devotion or love and discipline, which is consistency. That's the saying it every time you're reminded to do it. That's the discipline, right? The mantra is a practice of devotion or love and discipline or consistency. But let the heart focus on love. Discipline is the decision to practice the mantra every time you remember, but love is the way to practice. Rule 4 is that you be willing to stay in the stillness of the mantra. Before the reminder of the mantra appeared, the mind may have been busy with world-based thoughts. You are not taking a break from thoughts when you say the mantra and then quickly returning to the world. You are using the mantra to let go of thoughts because they have no real importance. And I think Roger stated that very well as well. You are releasing your attachment to illusion and returning the mind to the heart, which is peace and stillness and willingness to listen only to me. This is the practice of the mantra. Done in love and with great and joyous willingness, the benefit to realization is also great. So let me look at the quote again. Hold on to the I am to the exclusion of everything else. The I am in movement creates the world. The I am at peace becomes the absolute. So what he's really saying is all of that chatter, 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 that is really coming from the I am, right? Because the I am is the consciousness, sense of self, the unity sense of self, but it created the individual sense of self, and the thinking is all about the individual sense of self. And so that's really still the I am. But he says that's what creates the world. That's what creates the illusion. And if your goal is to realize the truth, you really need all of that illusion to take a break, because again, that's That's this. That's the blanket. So you need all of that illusion to take a break. And so you're remembering the I am, or you're remembering the I am that I am, however you're choosing to do it, in order to take that break. And of course, I said before I played the Roger Castillo audio, I said that this was for beginners. Because the way that Roger's describing it and the way that it's described in a Ramana, it is for beginners. At some point, you aren't saying the mantra and just being in beingness for a second. At some point, you are learning to sit there with your eyes closed for 3 or 4 hours or whatever and abiding in that beingness. And that we know that Nisargadatta is pointing us in that direction. But how many of you are capable in this moment of sitting down, closing your eyes, going into the stillness and staying there for 3 or 4 hours without thought? Right. Right. Me neither. So we start where we're at with the mantra, the way Roger described it, the way Inner Ramana describes it. What we want to do is we want to break that habit of just constantly giving our attention to our thoughts. That's what this is all about. And learn to abide in that stillness more and more and more. You know, I'm always reminded of, you know, the Wizard of Oz. You know, when Dorothy's house landed in Munchkin Land, and then they decided she needed to get to Emerald City to figure out how to get back to Kansas, Glinda, the good witch, told her that in order, you know, she had to follow the yellow brick road, but that the best place to start was at the beginning. Remember, she had to go back into the very first brick, and at first it seemed like she was going in nowhere because she was going in circles, but eventually she got to the Emerald City and got home. We want to go home too, you know, and so we need to start where we're at. And so if we can't close our eyes and abide in the I am presence for 3 or 4 hours, but we can say the mantra and abide for a few seconds several times a day, and that's where we start. And be happy about it. All right, that's it. I'll text you a title. I love y'all.